Facebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, October 16th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and a half or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we kick off a new week here. Two guests coming your way this afternoon. The first, Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. The second, Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. With Joe, we'll go over our Monday Night Football preview and our NFL Week in Review. Now with Kyle Hunter, our college football first look as we head into week 8 of the college football season. Hard to believe that college football regular season already more than halfway finished here. Feels like we just started, but you know, of course, the season goes all the way on into January with the national championship game. A couple of things I want to mention before we get into today's first segment. Over at bangthebook.com, my week 8 college football power ratings have been posted. Also, my NFL opening line report for week 7. Got some interesting numbers out there for you to check out already. Contests over at bangthebook.com, daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won, cash prizes available for all of those. This and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, use the promo code BTB and the number 25, get a $25 free bet just for signing up, a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, and a 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. So you can check that out over at DSI Sportsbook. Two segments coming your way here today. The first with Mr. Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. Joseph, how's it going today, man?
Hanging in there, Adam. Another brutal Sunday. I just wish I bet the underdogs across the board because those dogs ate well on Sunday.
Those dogs most definitely did eat well on Sunday, including some outright upsets. The Giants had one. Chicago had one. Miami had a very surprising one as a double-digit dog. We'll talk about that one here in a few minutes. And the Jets possibly could have even pulled an outright upset over New England, but a very controversial call, kind of sealing their fate there in that one. But, Joe, let's talk about this Monday Night Football game here. As you mentioned, it's been the week of the barking dogs. We've got a big dog here in this one. Indianapolis catching 7.5. This number is kind of moving around a little bit here this morning, but Marcus Mariota going to go for Tennessee. But as you and I were talking about before the show here, who knows what we're going to get from Mariota.
How healthy he is currently, that's what's going to decide this game, in my opinion. I mean, that hamstring couldn't be worse for a quarterback that depends on his feet in that zone read, and they can't run it with Mariota. Well, the Colts defense or any defense worth a salt is going to know they're going to stack aside and run blitz DeMarco Murray, Derrick Henry, whoever's in that backfield. It's just there's no way that offense can work without the threat at quarterback that creates on that backside. You just have to honor it. And when you don't, that just eliminates one from the numbers. The Titans also, I mean, even with Mariota, there's not a lot of speed on this offense. I mean, Decker, Matthews, these are possession wideouts, and sure, they counted on Corey Davis to add a little bit of that element and stretch the field for them. But as it is, I mean, sure, Matthews is a good player, but they're dependent a lot on their tight ends. That's basically where they're going to win in this game, too. They've got two guys that can move, two guys that can really run. Tennessee, that's where they just win a lot of matchups because there's not a lot of linebackers that could run with that rookie, Jonnu Smith. I mean, that kid has some speed about him. And Delonte Walker, I mean, I know everyone's seen that. And we're talking about John Bostic, Antonio Morrison. That's going to be a problem I would anticipate. And even Mariota at half strength, if he can just survive long enough, I think the linebackers are an issue. So I've got to assume Indianapolis is going to run extra safeties, a little more T.J. Green in a joker role, but I'd look for Malik Hooker to really kind of isolate maybe on Delonte Walker. Those two should be paired up. If there's a premium matchup in this game, there really isn't, but that's one you're certainly going to see. I'm just, once again, I'm not sure the Titans have a real threat outside, you know, and that's where the issue is. They're just going to have to bludgeon teams with their running game, and that may not work. Colts on offense, though, I mean, it's kind of similar. They're going where Jacoby Brissett takes them. I've liked what I've seen, honestly, and just bottom line, I think the Colts just won on that trade. They ditched Dorsett. The Pats are now responsible for his deal, and now well, say what you want about Andrew Luck, but in the future, the Colts might just have two quarterbacks, which is not the worst thing to have, especially in the stock market of free agency in the NFL. You could always sell a quarterback. And I think just in this situation, though, we're still talking about a Tennessee secondary that's beatable. They gave up a bunch of big plays to Houston. John Cyprian is still out of this lineup, and the Colts have some speed, like the dynamic type of offensive players that really make it bright out there. That the Titans don't have. Well, Indy has Marlon Mack. That's a real X factor. I know the listeners remember him from South Florida. That game-breaking speed, and that creates a perimeter responsibility for these defenders. I mean, you have to make sure Mack doesn't get to the edge, because he's going to keep running for a long while if he breaks that contain. So Titans linebacker is going to have a problem here. There's still elite speed with T.Y. Hilton. I don't care what you say. I mean, that kind of deep speed just threatens the defense. Once again, makes them honest. Jack Doyle's back in the lineup. So the Tennessee secondary back half and backers, they're going to have some problems running with these guys. Probably the big crux for Indy, though, Jack Muhort now done for the year. Indy's going to shuffle guys around. The right side's just, I don't know what to say, a jungle gym. Like, there's guys just coming in and out, swinging off of bars. I think the one stable we've actually had is Jeremy Bunovich has started 5 games now at left guard. Look, that's actually pretty good. So I don't know what they do, if it's Joel Hague coming back inside from right tackle, put LaRaven Clark out there, but that promises to be a big issue in this game. So there's quite a few question marks coming into tonight for me.
Yeah, there are a lot of question marks on both sides here. And, of course, the health of Marcus Mariota is certainly the biggest one. I mean, you look at this Tennessee offense, 350 yards against the Raiders, 390 against Jacksonville, 420 against Seattle. You lose Mariota in that Houston game, and we all saw what happened there in that one. And then, of course, just 188 yards against the Miami Dolphins last week, which all of a sudden that loss doesn't look as bad given what Miami did last week there, or this past weekend with the Atlanta Falcons. But, you know, for Tennessee here, I mean, look, this running game still 4.8 yards per carry. DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry both running the ball effectively. Mariota's legs in the running game are very, very important to this team. 20 carries for a 116, 3 touchdowns, 5.8 average. They need that extra dynamic. They need that element. And just because Mariota's back in the lineup, it is an upgrade for this team. I mean, Mariota with a club foot and a severed leg would still be better than Matt Castle at quarterback. But the problem here is that we don't know if Mariota can get out and run. And the question then becomes, you know, for this Indianapolis defense here, does Ted Monachino worry a lot about Mariota getting out and running? Does he put his defensive ends and some of his linebackers in contain? Or does he go ahead and charge up to the line, try and stuff and fill those run gaps? I think that's really what the key to this game is from an X's and O's standpoint, is how much attention does Indianapolis pay to the threat of Mariota running, because that can open up some other things for Tennessee and allow them to move the football. Now, if Indianapolis says, hey, if Mariota beats us with his legs, so be it. I think they can have a lot of success here because they do stop the run at a pretty good rate, only allowing 3.9 yards per carry this season. And that Tennessee pass game just doesn't give you a whole lot to get excited about. So in looking at this number here, I mean, I understand the desire to back Tennessee with Mariota because they've been so much better of a team with him. But still, he's nowhere near 100%. And getting 7.5 here in this one, I think Indianapolis has to be worth a look.
That's it's Indy or nothing for me there, because just like what you said, that I think they will just go in with that game plan. We'll stack, we'll press, we'll shut down the run, and you know, if Marcus beats us, that was our gamble. We will lose that, like, in their perspective. But I just don't see it happening. I think it's just too far from missing. And once again, hamstring, that saps your explosiveness. That really kind of discounts what he can do outside of the pocket if he does something. So, and this plays into the Colts' corners' favor. I mean, they're not speed guys, they're physical press corners. Vontae Davis against Rashard Matthews, I dare say he could win that. I mean, that's a decent matchup just because these guys, similar strengths, but once again, not having that perimeter element, missing that, I think that kind of favors with the Colts. I don't know, well, just they don't have to do things they can't do. They can't run, but they could beat you in a phone booth. They could kill you from close within if you can't run, and that's kind of what we're looking at. I don't want to say a wounded animal in the Titans, but I think it's very suspect, and I'd have to agree with you. If there is a side that I'm looking at, it would be Indy and not Tennessee.
All right, before we move away from this game and look at some of the things that happened over the weekend, let's talk a little bit about the prognosis here for the Colts going forward. They obviously played tonight against Tennessee. Short week with a little bit of a turnaround there to take on Jacksonville. At least that game is at home here for the Colts. So you know, they will be able to get home, get back to practice on some sort of practice on Tuesday, and then, of course, really get after it on Wednesday. What's the latest on Andrew Luck that you're hearing? I mean, is there a chance that he'll be able to go here against Jacksonville this week?
Mystery on Luck. I think a limited session early in the week and then nothing for the rest of the week of practice. I just don't see a scenario that's likely where he comes back before the bye, and even at that point, what he comes back for. There's just multiple just rumors. You could hear anything from, oh, he's going to retire, or he's walking away from the game, or he's demanding. I mean, it's just, like I said, you hear a little bit of everything around here in Indianapolis, but I stand by that this shoulder was a lot more serious than they had originally planned. The rehab didn't go as expected, and I'm really anticipating we don't see him for the rest of the year. That's just kind of where I'm with it. And also, I believe Chris Ballard, that's not the worst thing in the world for him. A new GM probably wouldn't mind if we went 4-12, 3-13, what have you. It increases the draft pick. He could also get rid of Pagano, bring in his staff, his men, his scheme. So if we don't see Luck at all the rest of the season, it would not surprise me.
All right, well, let's look back at what we saw here in week 6 of the NFL season, beginning with this Miami-Atlanta game. My one loss in the Super Contest this weekend was on the Atlanta Falcons. They were laying 11.5 in the Super Contest, got steamed up to 14 out there at several shops in the betting market. They get off to a 17-0 start. You're thinking, okay, you know, this looks like it's a pretty good spot for Atlanta here going into the second half. Miami team that has done nothing offensively, now they're in a 17-point hole. Well, all of a sudden, Atlanta forgot how to play football. They had about 90 total yards in the second half of this game. Dolphins come away with the 20-17 win, scoring 20 unanswered points. Help me out with this one, Joe. What did you see in this game?
Well, I had to watch this one over because I've now been part of the two biggest collapses in most recent Falcons history. This was my survivor pick also for the week as well. But the Falcons lost the line of scrimmage. That's just both sides of the ball. And that's what I saw when I rewatched this. People are going to see the final score and just assume the Falcons blew this game, which they did. And classic look ahead spot, which it was. Patriots game coming up. But I think they had real problems blocking Ndamukong Suh. And if anybody does watch this, I swear he got away with 3 offside penalties that were not called. I mean, and I understand anticipated snap count, but that's just offsides and cheating. I mean, he's stealing cadence and before the ball snap, in my opinion. But that, be that as it may, the Falcons, I think they should not have been up 17-0 at halftime. I mean, Miami was moving the ball. Jay Ajayi was running well. It's just some first half mistakes. There was another. Tunzel had a false start. That put him behind the chains. Cutler forces a 20-yard pass in scoring position, and Deion Jones just made an athletic backside play. It was that's his game. He's just so fast. He's got great acceleration. And it's also Carew. I don't know that he was running the right route. I think that was a receiver. But second half, yeah, Jay Ajayi, he's a force. He just came out of that O-line, actually played a good game. I've been really critical of Tunzel. I expected a lot more out of him coming out of Ole Miss. I mean, just kind of a rare bird at left tackle. Basketball skills, I think, athletically, it's just he putting the pieces together. I think he did some good things with pass protection, and Anthony Steen is turning it on at left guard, number 65. I think he played a really nice game, but Jay Cutler, sure, tale of two halves for him with the turnovers and then the touchdowns, but I really think the Miami O-line, they just beat up on a more talented Falcons defensive front. Cody Parkey, the kicker, you got to shout him out for those two clutch kicks. But I think, yeah, Falcons just didn't look like a team coming off a bye, and there's no halftime adjustments, and I'm starting to really look at Steve Sarkisian. Like, where is he at with this team? The game plan in the second half, I do not believe we saw enough Julio and enough Devontae Freeman. I mean, they were having some success getting those runs and just finally blew up for a 44-yard game for Freeman. But this, you honestly have to, you know, respect the Dolphins' defense. They came out lit. Rashard Jones, I think Atlanta native, played out of his mind in this game. And, defensive line for the Dolphins showed up.
I think that one of the things that we have to look at here and try to figure out is that you've got a Miami team that's now 3-2. And offensively, this Miami team has been atrocious. It was one of the reasons I went against them in the Super Contest here this week. 4 yards per play on the season. So nothing explosive whatsoever. And you start looking at this situation, you start looking at this record, you look at the fact that they did beat the Falcons. Like you said, second half becomes a look-ahead spot with that 17-0 lead. Still inexcusable to blow that game. But how long can Miami sustain this? I mean, when you look at what this defense is doing, you know, they're really carrying this football team. On the offensive side, they've got guys. They have weapons. They have the ability to actually improve this team offensively if Jay Cutler can, you know, figure out how to throw some guys open, if they can fix some run blocking schemes to get Jay Ajayi a few more big holes. Like, I feel like at this point, Miami could crater, or Miami could suddenly pick up some helium and wind up being, you know, a team we talk about in a couple of weeks as possibly being a wild card contender. What do you think, Joe? What do you think long-term for this team?
Well, I think, you know, one game in a vacuum here, it's still, there's going to be some really tough matchups. Right? We'll see how they look against the Baltimore defense, Carolina's defense. But, yeah, a matchup against the Jets, a matchup against Oakland. This is a situation for that offense to show some of what they've accomplished. And, yeah, I'd say there's a small buy sign on them. Definitely in the respect that Jay Cutler now is kind of through his preseason, really. And, you know, I would look at the preseason as his training camp. You know, he's more up to speed in that respect. And also it takes lines the time to gel. I think there was definitely an adjustment period for Tunsil at tackle. You know, he played guard all last year. Steen, I don't believe, started off the season healthy this year. So it's just – it's been an adjustment on that side of the ball, but I think they're starting to catch up a little bit to the offense. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking for value on them going ahead. But as far as making the postseason, I don't know. I mean, that's getting past Buffalo. I like what Buffalo's got going on, and, you know, New England's not going anywhere. But, yeah, I would have to admit I'm looking for value spots on this Dolphins team because I'll have to fess up. This is a team I kind of liked going into the season before Tannehill got hurt. I thought there's, you know, some elements of this team that are really strong, particularly at wide receiver and on defense on that line. There's some difference makers. When you've got pass rushers and wide receivers that are threats, I mean, you're in games.
All right, well, the Green Bay Packers lost more than a football game here this past weekend, falling to the Vikings 23-10. They also lost Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers just 2 of 4, 18 yards passing here in this game, and then he winds up leaving with the broken collarbone. So you go to Brett Hundley. Brett Hundley, 18 of 33, 3 interceptions, 1 touchdown pass here, but, you know, it really wasn't a good look for Hundley. Mike McCarthy came out after the game, gave him a vote of confidence, effectively said, you know, hey, he's our guy. Well, he's their guy. So what do you think going forward here for Green Bay?
It's going to be rough. I mean, like you said, they lost a lot more in the game. This could be a season. And I just want to address, like, people who are, oh, that's outlawed hit. You know, Anthony Barr's got to be suspended or fined. And I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a clean hit. And if you eliminate some of that out of the game, where are we? I mean, he drove him into the ground, yes, but if you're griping about anything, I would say the timing, the lateness is most of the egregiousness. But, I should be more mad than anyone. I had the Packers minus 3. Rodgers is my quarterback in 2 leagues for fantasy. The Packers were my Super Bowl pick, but I'd still argue that that's part of the game. I mean, it is what it is. Look how Jameis Winston got taken down in a similar nature. We see this happening with quarterbacks. It's just, I don't know that you can take it out, but I still think there's too much talent on this Packers offense not to wait for the right time and scoop up a little value. I think particularly on overs, they were able to make some plays against a really solid Vikings defense. And the problem with that adjustment is, you know, Hundley's coming in and it's Aaron's game plan, and they don't really have anything specialty wise ready for Brent and, you know, his skills. So I think crux of the matter, and you could just, in that game, Mike Zimmer really licking his chops, sending all kinds of defensive blitzes, and that's what's going to be most of the problem going forward. I think defensive coordinators, they're going to get real happy on stacking sides and just trying to confound them, because they'll just, you know, if Brett Hundley burns us, that's fine, but they won't believe it until they see it. So that's, I think there will definitely be a tough adjustment plan, but I also think a new Packers offense is definitely on its way. They have to change things and tailor make it more to Hundley's strengths. It's not that Aaron wasn't an athletic quarterback. It's just Hundley's a little bit more athletic, and where he thrives is throwing on the run. Course defenses are going to know that, but we're going to see more bootlegs. I think they're a little bit you know, more extra protection. That's a big issue where things will change, but I don't want to say option, but we're going to see some of those plays with Aaron Jones and Hundley to where it's just a zone read. So I would say definitely a big adjustment period. And if we see some sloppy games coming up, sure, but I think they're still going to score points. There's still holes in this Packers defense. I would be looking to sneak in some overs where the books think, well, they don't have the same offense, we're going to take those totals down. I don't know that they're going to go down. That's my question.
Well, if you look out there in the betting market now, New Orleans is a 5.5-point road favorite at Lambeau Field, which is kind of remarkable to think about. And this number was actually on the look-ahead lines at Westgate, Green Bay -6.5. So we saw that number get reposted, Green Bay -3.5, so a 10-point adjustment to Aaron Rodgers here, and that's not really a big surprise. I mean, he is probably the most valuable player in the NFL from a point spread standpoint, but now we're seeing even more money piling in on New Orleans, and because, you know, Aaron Rodgers is out, and obviously that's, I mean, clearly significant, but Green Bay also lost three offensive linemen in this game, both tackles, Bakhtiari and Bulaga, who suited up on the same day for the first time this season, and they both go out in this game. Lane Taylor left this game. They lost several members of the secondary. They've had guys hurt pretty much all year long. So it's not just Rodgers. I mean, we're talking about Green Bay possibly missing four offensive starters, three on the line, plus Rodgers. Ty Montgomery, of course, has been banged up as well, so we could even extend that out to five offensive starters. Several guys in the secondary. This is not a good week to catch the New Orleans Saints either, who just scored 52 on Detroit, although they did have three defensive touchdowns in that game. But, man, I mean, for Green Bay here, I don't know what they can do with a quick turnaround. And that bye week after the Saints game looks like an absolute godsend at this point if they want to save their season.
You know, at least the schedule makers gave them a break because they haven't got many other breaks. The offensive line is going to, like I said, the adjustment period, it's going to be a pretty steep learning curve there for Hundley, because he'll be running for his life. But after this bye, I still believe it's they're going to be in games. And I think, like I said, it's going to be more simplistic offense. And sure, you're not going to get these 12 men on the field, the audibles and the basic broken plays that Rodgers thrives in and can pick defenses apart. It's just going to be in a different nature, but Hundley's a chain mover. If they could run his kind of scheme and maybe take a page out of the Houston Texans book in the respects of, you know, not a lot of multiple reads, just max protect, get what they've done with Watts. Not saying that Hundley's a Deshaun Watson by any means, but yeah, like I said, after this, you know, that they're pinned down, injured, but after this bye week, I tell you, I'd look for, you know, maybe some, I don't know, team totals on the Packers that with people anticipating them struggling to score. I still think with all this talent at wideout, this scheme, they'll find ways to put points up.
All right, so the New York Giants picked up a win here. They were a double-digit dog in the Mile High City against Denver. Giants got outgained in this game 412-266, but the defense with three takeaways. Eli Manning and the offense didn't turn the football over at all. So we've got a Giants victory here. They got a pick six from Janoris Jenkins here in this game. And, you know, I mean, look, for the Giants here, they've been close. I mean, this is a team that has played competitively throughout the season. The defense has really carried this team. And the defense is going to have to carry this team because they're missing a ton of talent at wide receiver. Obviously, Odell Beckham Jr. and Brandon Marshall being the two biggest guys there. But the previous three losses for the Giants, 3 points to the Eagles, 2 points to the Bucs, 5 points to the Chargers. One of these games was coming, but I think it was very surprising to see it here on the road against Denver.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the altitude, and it looked like the Broncos were the ones huffing and puffing. I think Ben McAdoo finally did his job and actually played head coach instead of offensive coordinator. It's not just giving up the play calling. He managed the team. I think three guys that won this game was Janoris Jenkins, still one of the best in the business, but in this specific case, last week walks off the field while there's still – I don't know, three knees to take and, you know, the whole controversy behind that. He manages Dominic Rogers-Cromartie and says, you know what, take a walk. We're going to take this road trip. We'll revisit this. I think managing that, Jason Pierre-Paul was a force. And really, once William Turner got in there, he really abused that poor kid. And I love Billy Turner from North Dakota State, but shouldn't have been out there. And then moving Justin Pugh over to the right tackle spot, if that wasn't the elixir for this sick offensive line that's been ailing all year long. I mean, Bobby Hart's got no business at tackle, and, you know, Pugh played tackle at Syracuse. It's almost you wondering what took so long, and I think the biggest takeaway from this whole game, being a bit of a Broncos fan over here, Von Miller was MIA last night. I don't remember seeing him. Justin Pugh, Justin Pugh made a lot of money in this game, especially when you consider he's a 2018 free agent. He's in a walk year. All he has to do is tell his agent to pop in the film against Von Miller and start counting the commas, I think. But be that as it may, it's still Ben McAdoo not calling the plays and finally delegating. I think that was magic. Mike Sullivan, you know, kudos to him. I think really, it was timing. They still ran that basic slant, the ton of Packers stuff that you see, that basic offense. But there was a lot of screens finally. They get Evan Engram matched up against Denver's lousy coverage linebackers and some quick outs, some back shoulders, options to where, you know, maybe Eli doesn't have all that time. I know it sounds like simple. Why couldn't McAdoo do this? But sometimes you need to step back, observe the situation, and I don't know. It's just simplifying things for just Mike Sullivan calling the plays, taking that away from McAdoo. I really believe that's what made this whole thing work. And Denver's offense getting behind the chains and turning the ball over didn't help anything. I mean, it's both sides of the ball. But that change, I think they've got to go with that. And I'm a superstitious type. I would copy everything they did this week, routine, leading up to the game. Even those pregame workouts Eli ran with the wide receivers on the routes he likes and just like how to run them, I would just try and mock that little coaching session because clearly it helped. It looked like Peyton working out with his wide receivers like every game in Indy. Dallas Clark, Austin Collie, Reggie Wayne, these guys weren't the best of players, but it's on the same page. We're all creatures of habit. And yeah, I'd go out of my way to repeat what they did this week. I see some good things coming up for the Giants. Just what they did without those wide receivers. I mean, what was Tavarius King doing before this game? Probably clocking in a shift at Walmart late night stocking. I have a total respect for that coaching job. Mike Sullivan, who's got a background as a wide receivers coach, mind you, did this game. Playing Seattle, they've got issues protecting the passer. Jason Pierre-Paul gets in Russell Wilson's face. You've got a little bit of a game, and I think the Seahawks let the Rams move the ball up and down the field in their last game. So, yeah, I think maybe there's a little bit of value, Giants, heading forward. If they're getting points at home, I wouldn't mind taking those points.
All right, let's look at this from the other side, though, and let's talk about the Denver Broncos here. Trevor Siemian going for an MRI after the game on his non-throwing shoulder, probably an AC joint sprain. We'll see what he's able to do here. Manuel Sanders, Isaiah McKenzie, Demaryius Thomas, all of them banged up here after this game. You know, we'll see if those guys are able to get back in the lineup here in short order. But, you know, for Denver, I mean, this was the concern. The offense was the concern for this football team. We all expected the defense to be really good. That has come to fruition here. But offensively, I mean, if Trevor Siemian can't go next week against the Chargers, you're down to Brock Osweiler, which is an interesting story in and of itself. You know, Denver, not much of a running game here in this one. Neither C.J. Anderson nor Jamal Charles could find holes. Anderson, 9 carries for 17 yards. He hasn't really found a whole lot of running room here at this point. What about Denver going forward? Again, a 3-2 team here, kind of in that mix for one of the wild card spots in the AFC. Is this a sign of some really big problems to come with the Chargers on the road, the Chiefs on the road, the Eagles on the road? 3 straight road games here coming up for Denver.
No doubt about it. It's the, and really, like you said, this, there were these issues coming up. We talked in the preseason, it's like, wow, this Broncos offense has a chance to be really bad, and this is one of their really bad moments. I think everyone knows the Emmanuel Sanders injury here, but Menelik Watson left this game, and that's when things got out of hand with Jason Pierre-Paul just starting to live in the backfield. And without Emmanuel, it's basically Demaryius Thomas. And, yeah, they better pray Siemian comes out of it, because it doesn't matter if it's Brock. It doesn't matter if it's Paxton Lynch. I believe they're the same guy, just switched at birth type of thing. They're both too gawky. They're uncoordinated. Neither of them has even zip code accuracy. It's just I really feel bad for John Elway, because he basically drafted the same guy 2 times in a row that can't play.
All right, one more team to talk about here as we take a look back at week 6. That's the San Francisco 49ers. So the 49ers are 0-6 on the year, but they are 4-2 against the spread. I think we can throw out that first game against Carolina because it was the first real action under new head coach Kyle Shanahan. So I think that one's kind of the outlier here. Since then, San Francisco lost by 3 at Seattle, 2 on Thursday night to the Rams, 3 at Arizona, 3 at Indianapolis in overtime, and then 2 against Washington here this past weekend. So they've played 4 road games out of their last 5 games. They've lost all of them by 3 points or less. This is a really competitive football team that just can't make enough plays at the end. They're going to go with C.J. Beathard for the foreseeable future. I mean, look, you got to give this team a ton of credit for being very competitive, being a good bet against the spread. Do they get over this hump here at some point? I mean, how do you think they stack up against Dallas this week?
I like the matchup. I mean, anybody that thinks this team's tanking, they're dead wrong. You just talked about their hard luck games, 3 or fewer losses in every one. They're trading away veterans. They outright cut Navarro Bowman. How will they stop teams on defense? And I think everyone buying in. And Greg Saleh, I think, is their coordinator. Everyone's hustling. They're forcing turnovers. And really, they're getting guys that are good fits for the scheme. Ray Armstrong is Saleh. You know, he worked in Jacksonville. This is the Telvin Smith. This is the Bobby Wagner, that highly athletic chase backer that fits right in that scheme. And now they're finally getting Reuben Foster, first-rounder, healthy. So they could run with teams, and their front four is huge. So I really like that whole front 7, the way it's developing. The issue going forward is they still have problems at corner. They'll continue to get beat deep. There's going to be chunk plays that they suffer at the hands of athletic wide receivers that just, you know, they jump over and they're going to make plays. But I think you've got a bunch of young guys in here. Like, even on offense, I don't think C.J. Beathard's all that bad. He's not all that great, but Kirk Cousins likely going to be their quarterback after next year. But this year, I think that Iowa connection is just going to show Beathard to George Kittle. And that's where the real revelation, and I'll have to fess up, I did not see this at Iowa. And this is a big reason why they let Vance McDonald walk. They've got the future in George Kittle. You knew he was a terrific blocker, but as a playmaking receiver, I just didn't see a lot of this at Iowa, what he's been able to do, just some jump ball plays. I think they've really got the number one going to the future. They're going to feature him in the passing game, and he's just a talented, well-rounded football player. I've seen some clips of him destroying people in the running game, so Kyle Shanahan's getting the pieces on offense, but where I think they're doing is, like it's Greg Salade, he's convincing these kids. They're all buying in on the scheme. They're all drinking the Kool-Aid. And, yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, Adam. If without Ezekiel Elliott, a Dallas team, the 49ers, I'm looking to on the buy sign at San Francisco at this rate. I mean, I don't think this these close losses and these hard luck losses are phony. I mean, this is a young team that just they don't know any better than just to go out there and try and get a job for next year.
I think it's really impressive what they did in that game against Washington. And I don't know if it's going to get enough credit, but they were on back-to-back road overtime games against the Cardinals and Colts and effectively played almost an entire fifth period in that game against the Colts. And then go all the way out to Washington and still have enough to hang around in that game. I mean, that's really, really impressive for them. Now, of course, there's a chance that that balloon kind of pops a little bit this week and Dallas just runs them over at home. And that certainly is something that could happen. Especially with another long road trip out to Philadelphia coming up after that. So the schedule has not done San Francisco any favors here. But the fact that they're improving at the margins, they're improving with the details here under Kyle Shanahan, you got to love that. And Kyle Shanahan's a guy that regular listeners of the show know that you and I love him. We're both big fans of what he can do with a football team. And also, he's learning. I mean, this is a guy that's a great offensive mind, obviously comes from a significant coaching tree. He's got it in the bloodlines, but he said as much in the preseason. He goes, look, this is different for me. This is something I have to adjust to. This is something I have to figure out. And, they don't have a win yet, but man, he's figuring it out because they've been in every game here so far. I know they haven't toughest schedule necessarily. The Cardinals are, having a lot of problems. The Colts are what they are, as we talked about already, but man, at some point, all of this effort, all of these close games, all of these tweaks, the development of the playbook on both sides of the ball, all of this stuff is going to pay off here. And I think that this 49ers team is going to continue to be a good bet against the spread. I mean, I don't know how quickly the market's going to adjust here to this, especially as you look this week. Again, no Ezekiel Elliott for Dallas. They have plenty of weapons otherwise. But San Francisco's catching 6 at home. First home game they've played, since that Thursday nighter against the Rams. And it looks like they're not getting much respect. So, I hope for their sake and for that fan base as well, they can really keep this thing going.
Oh, and I like you said, I look for them to. And I'm a firm believer if it's not Kyle Shanahan, if it's Bill Belichick, that you find coaches that are organized, that you believe in them and their scheme. And Kyle's going to get it figured out. There's some veteran help here. I mean, Pierre Garçon helping the rest of these receivers, that's your coach on the field and a big reason why they signed him. He's not just still a really great player making the difference. It's also in the classroom where he's helping to teach. I think Carlos Hyde on another guy, kind of a walk-off contract year situation. It doesn't matter if it's this team or the next team. He's putting good film out there no matter what. And I think they've discovered a little weapon here in Matt Breida. That's another guy where kind of similar to Marlon Mack. If you get him on the edge, Breida's going to go a ways. I mean, just had a bad last season at Georgia Southern, and that's the only reason. I blame Tim Summers. That's the only reason Breida goes undrafted, and that's, hey, we got him at College Gridiron Showcase, so that's one in our back pocket. But I think there's weapons on this 49ers team. They're discovering just as the season goes on, and like I said, I love what I've seen out of George Kittle. I think that's going to be a kind of a big part of their offense going forward. And yeah, they've just got some guys they can rely on offensively. And this front seven, what I've seen, that they're adapting to this Seattle style defense that's being installed. I didn't think they'd adapt this quickly. So if they could shore up that secondary and get some more help at corner, I think they're really going to have, that's going to be a strength of their team. I mean, I'd certainly hope so. They've spent the draft picks for it to be.
Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. What's going on over there at the website right now, Joe?
Oh, we're doing our daily scouting report series. So like I said last week, you're going to get a new prospect every single day at the website. Our game previews, we've got the weekly podcast. It's either Thursday or Friday, depending on the week. And, of course, like I said, College Gridiron Showcase, we're doing the conference calls. We're bringing you the small school players that you need to know from college football. So, check it all out at NFLDraftBible.com.
And, of course, late Thursday nights and on into Friday, Joe does his college football totals, best bets piece for us over at bangthebook.com. You can follow Joe on Twitter at Joe W. Everett and then at NFL Draft Bible. Joe, thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, bud.
All right, looking forward to it.
Good stuff there with Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. Something I forgot to mention at the top of the show here today, the NBA season tips off on Tuesday night. You know about my NHL situational betting article that gets posted every Sunday over at bangthebook.com. That's up on the homepage right now, so you can look for those good situational spots in the NHL. But I've also got one up here for week one of the NBA season. Again, that starts Tuesday night. Cavs, Celtics, Rockets, Warriors to get things going with a TNT doubleheader. We'll get some NBA content on the show here this week. We'll talk about it some with Cheetah on Tuesday's show. Thursday, Ralph Michaels is unable to join us, so I'll probably try to pick up an NBA guest there with that so we can get a little bit of talk about the association here on the show this week. And, you know, it's just another market to add to the equation for you. I'll throw out a couple of things that I talked about in my situational article here with some NBA betting tips for you. And the first one is that, much like the NHL, you know, I would wait a little bit to really dive in to the NBA. You know, you got a lot of player movement, a lot of things happen in the offseason here, you know, and you've got some guys that are very high usage players that have to figure out how to play with different teammates. Some guys that are, you know, generally higher usage players that are going to a team where they're not the shining star. So from an NBA standpoint here, I think it's very important to limit your exposure early on, see how some of these teams come together, see how these players are a fit with the new head coaches. Don't dive in too deep here. You know, watch games, pay attention for some betting angles, look at the market, watch the betting market, check out the lines, see which teams are getting steamed in what situations, see where there are some teams that could be a little bit undervalued coming into the season, some teams that could be a little bit overvalued coming into the season. You know, just take a lot of notes here early on over the first couple of weeks. You can play some of these situational spots if you want to. You know, first game with travel, back-to-backs, things of that sort as these players try to get into the rhythm of the season. But you know, like anything else, you want to be very careful at the outset here. Limit your exposure, limit your risk, manage your bankroll properly. But you can check out that situational betting article for the NBA every Sunday over at bangthebook.com here throughout the season. One more segment left for this Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is the College Football First Look with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Going pretty good, man. What a wild weekend of college football, huh?
It was. And I got to tell you, I played, I think, 6 or 7 of the Bet Online openers, you know, that came out last Sunday, and I missed on all 7 of them. So that tells me right there that it was a ridiculous week. It's hard to go 0-for-7 on those soft numbers. I'm pretty upset about it.
Yeah, I didn't have a very good Saturday either. I went 5-7 on the premiums. You know, I feel like I should have done better. I liked the card, like I mentioned to you in my email. I thought it was a pretty good card, but it didn't fall right. And huge dogs cashing, you know, huge dogs obviously winning outright. And just a wild weekend. It, you know, it happens sometimes. Kind of like we've said before, don't overreact to it. And I know you had a good Sunday in the NFL, and I did as well. So that was a nice bounce back from Saturday.
I mean, we probably should have known, right? We probably should have known that last weekend in college football was going to be a disaster. Troy got beat outright. You know, we saw Clemson and Washington State both go down on Friday the 13th. We probably should have seen this coming. I mean, I don't know what we would have done differently necessarily, but we should have seen it coming.
Yeah, there's always one of these weekends, you know. It might happen a couple times a year, but it hadn't really happened before this. And here was the wild weekend where, you know, all these things that you just did not see coming happen. And I don't think it's even the fact that these teams lost as far as the top 10 teams. It's how they lost. You know, Washington State, I mean, what was that performance against Cal? I watched a decent amount of that game. And that was just amazing. Luke Falk just turning the ball over nonstop. They looked terrible in that game. They didn't just lose. They looked awful. I think Clemson was probably the most excusable to me. Bryant getting injured. I still don't think they should have lost to Syracuse, obviously, but Bryant's a pretty key player for them. We've talked about how well he's done in that offense, and I'm surprised that Clemson's defense gave up as much as they did, but still, I think Clemson would have had a lot better shot if Bryant hadn't gotten injured early in that game.
Kelly Bryant shouldn't have even played in that game. you know, I've talked a lot about Dabo Swinney here on the show, and I give him a lot of credit. I think he's a very good head coach. I think he's a great motivator of men. And, you know, I mean, you could see it. There was that clip going around on Twitter of him telling Dino Babers after the game, hey, I'm so happy for you. You know, that he got that huge – I mean, it's a game that Clemson can bounce back from. If they run the table, win the ACC, they're going to be in the playoff anyway. But still, I mean, the way that he handled himself in that situation was very impressive. But then you look at the way that he handled Kelly Bryant, who was clearly less than probably even 80%. He's hobbling around. He has no explosiveness, can't get out of the pocket in the face of pressure. And Syracuse just sent blitz after blitz after blitz at him, and that's exactly what they should have done. And then, of course, he has his head slammed against the turf, and that was it for his night. And his night should have been over long before that. And hopefully, you know, there's no long-lasting carryover to what looks like a pretty awful concussion that he had. But, man, he never should have been in that game to begin with. And you could see as that game was playing out that Clemson was in serious trouble. Even if he had finished that game out, the way that he was hobbling around, you know, he just wasn't effective. And Clemson didn't really do enough to adjust. I thought it was really disappointing that he was out there, you know, even playing in that situation. But, you know, I mean, there were other games. At Washington, 7 points in Tempe against the Sun Devils. I mean, Auburn getting beaten after they go up 20, after they score 23 points in the first half, nothing in the second half. Miami barely survives Georgia Tech. Strange week overall for sure.
Yeah, I don't know how Arizona State held Washington to 7 points. That one was really baffling. You know, certainly not an Arizona State defense that I thought very highly of going into that game. And then the other one, I have to say, you know, mea culpa on the San Diego State call last week. San Diego State, they gave up two touchdowns that were non-offensive touchdowns in the first quarter. And then later in the game, Boise State kind of bullied them in the trenches. I'm really surprised San Diego State wasn't able to run. I know Boise has a decent defensive front. I was surprised that Boise could run as much as they could on San Diego State. I definitely didn't see that one coming, but it was just one of those weekends where a lot of things didn't make much sense.
And it even carried over into Sunday with Akron improving to 3-0 in the MAC by winning in Kalamazoo over Western Michigan. That was an interesting little spot, because the game was postponed to Sunday because the field flooded in Kalamazoo due to some pretty heavy rains. And then, you know, Akron just goes out and wins on Sunday, and Western Michigan didn't look very good. That was a 14-3 game through three quarters. Then Western Michigan put a rally together. So again, just one of those weeks. You don't want to overreact too much to what you've seen. And of course, you know, you got to keep a proper mindset here as we head on into week eight. Let's talk about heading into week eight here, Kyle. I know we like to talk about our quick hitters segment. Injury news and notes, some other stuff that's popped up from last week. So what's the first point you got on that list?
Yeah, I feel like we have several good notes here for this week. Let's start with Troy. You know, Troy, like you said, with a pretty bad loss there last week. Obviously, they had a pretty big hangover from LSU, even though they had extra week. But Jordan Chun, their running back, is questionable for this week with an arm injury. I think he had like a laceration to his arm, a pretty severe laceration to his arm. They need him in their offense for balance. You know, this is an offense that really hasn't been as good as most people assumed they would be. Silvers needs Chun back there to be a good running threat, or else Troy is too one-dimensional. So keep an eye on that injury.
Yeah, that is a big one. I mean, they take on Georgia State this week, so at least, you know, they've got a little bit of a respite here against a team that's not great, but also Georgia State's 2-0 here in Sun Belt play. So Sean Elliott doing a very, very good job with that program. I mean, look, you know, this is a Troy team that I think you kind of saw sort of a really good example of why college football can be a tough sport to handicap, because we talked about on last Monday's show how Troy had that extra time, how it should be good enough for them to get over that LSU win, and it wasn't. And, you know, they had close wins over New Mexico State and Akron right before that. So, you know, again, I mean, you're subject to a lot of variance when you're banking on 18 to 23-year-old kids.
Yeah, definitely. And I do like, after that game, Neil Brown came out and said, hey, this was on me. You know, I got out-coached. That's why we lost this game. I need to have these guys ready to play. I think he's a very good young head coach, and I think Troy will be good going forward. Coastal Carolina, their top two quarterbacks are both questionable for this game against Appalachian State. Coastal Carolina is a team that hasn't been very good to start with, and you know they don't have their coach this season. One of their backup quarterbacks is out for the season as well. So their top two quarterbacks both questionable for this week's game. Definitely something you're going to want to keep an eye on.
Well, and of course, too, with a team like Coastal Carolina, I mean, this number is off the board for that reason here, so we don't have a number on that one to discuss here. But, you know, also, when you make that transition from FCS to FBS, you're kind of relying on those starters because those are the closest guys you have to FBS-level players. And for Coastal Carolina, it's going to be a building process here to try and get this roster, you know, on the two deep up to FBS standards. And if they're already tapping into a lot of depth, I mean, you kind of saw it last week. They got beat 51-17, didn't do much offensively. You know, you could see them get blown out here again this week.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And Coastal Carolina is a team that would rather run, but they get behind pretty quickly, and then, you know, they have to try to play catch-up by passing. And if they're without some of those quarterbacks, they're going to be in trouble. As far as quarterback problems, another kind of under-the-radar one, Buffalo, Tyree Jackson has been out for a little while with an injury, their starter at the beginning of the season. Drew Anderson stepped in, played really well for them, and then got hurt last weekend at the end of the first half, I believe it was, against Northern Illinois. Anderson didn't play after halftime. Buffalo scored 0 points in the second half of that game. There were actually 0 points scored in the whole second half of that game. I had the over in that game, and I checked that one at halftime and thought I was in decent shape, and then I saw at the end of the game that they didn't score in the whole second half, and that was kind of a kick in the nuts. But, you know, what do you do? You've got Buffalo now with a big question mark there at quarterback because, like I said, I think actually Drew Anderson was playing better than Tyree Jackson. So they had a little bit of a controversy when Jackson comes back, but now you don't even know if either one of them's going to play. And that's why there's no number here. I will say, though, also Miami on the other side of this game, Miami's Gus Ragland is not expected to play again this weekend. We talked about that one last week, and Ball is a big step down from Gus Ragland, and Miami lost outright to Kent State, so I think that proves that they really need Ragland in there.
Yeah, losing to Kent State is a really, really bad look with what's going on with Kent State here this season. Kyle Van Treese is the guy that could go this week for Buffalo if Jackson and Anderson aren't ready. He's a true freshman, 6'3", 232, so he's a big kid, but just 8 of 16 throwing in the last game and had 3 sacks in the second half, and that was his first appearance of the season. So doesn't really look like he's all that mobile of a kid. What's really interesting is that, you know, with Anderson, he was more of a thrower, and Jackson was more of a dual threat type guy. If Buffalo can get both of those guys healthy here at the same time at some point throughout the rest of the season and have packages for both of them, they're a really interesting team. I mean, they're already a team that I had severely underrated coming into the year. They've already exceeded expectations by quite a bit. They're out there. I don't know if they've gone over their season win total already or not, but I think they might have pushed it already. That's a team that's been playing really, really well. And if you get both of those guys together here for the end of the regular season, could be a very interesting team as we get some of that weeknight action going on.
Yeah, they could, definitely. And I see just as we're talking right here, the line comes up at Chris that Miami of Ohio is favored by 2.5 right now against Buffalo. Miami of Ohio at home in that one. So clearly the odds makers have downgraded Miami of Ohio quite a bit without Gus Ragland.
Yeah, I got that number, Miami minus 2.5 right now without Ragland. So it's pretty much where I put it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair as well. I think I had 3. So I think that's a fair number. I wanted to say something about turnover luck. We haven't talked about this so far this year, I don't believe, and I think it's a good point to bring this up. Purdue has forced 9 fumbles and has recovered all 9 of them. That's definitely not going to keep happening, so that's something to keep in mind. On the other end, Virginia, they've fumbled the ball 13 times, and they've lost just 1 of those 13 fumbles. That's way too lucky. I think Virginia is a much better team this season, but for both Virginia and Purdue, that's just kind of caution signs going forward.
Yeah, that's something that it's kind of a big point of contention out there. I've seen some people, you know, make some snide comments about it. Fumble luck to me is a real thing. I mean, fumbles are generally going to fall somewhere around 50%. you know, you're probably going to break even more often than not in the fumble category. Yeah, I mean, some teams do force more fumbles than others. That's certainly a thing. But if you've got a really lopsided ratio, like a couple of the ones that you just talked about there, that is something that should regress to the mean. I mean, interceptions are something that's going to happen. Coverage schemes are better. You've got better athletes in the secondary, whatever the case may be. But, you know, when you talk about fumble luck, that is a real thing. And it's something that, you know, you probably should be following along with.
Yeah, definitely. There's a big difference between, you know, saying that there are certainly some teams that are going to take care of the ball better than other teams. I don't think either one of us would disagree with that. But once the ball's on the ground, it should be pretty close to 50-50. I mean, at that point, if you're picking up the ball every single time, it's not going to keep going. So that's what we mean by fumble luck. And, you know, there is going to be teams, like I said, that are much better at taking care of the ball and teams that are really sloppy with the football. But, you know, once the ball's on the ground, it should be pretty close to 50-50. I have a really good bye week system I wanted to point out here. From week six on, you know, bye weeks help much less early in the season. I think that's pretty much widely known. But from week six on, backing teams with a win percentage of 70% or higher off a bye week, laying less than 10 points, is 84-38 against the spread, 69% in the last 122 contests. I think this is a really interesting one. And it also gets even stronger when they're facing another very good team. So another team with a 70% straight-up win percentage or higher. In that spot, it's 41-11 ATS the last 52. Look for those spots in the coming weeks. There's going to be some really good teams off bye weeks playing against other good teams. That's been a really good spot to look for in the past.
Well, that's got to be a coaching thing, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you get a team that has a really good coach coming off, you know, extra time. And usually in these spots, too, the other team doesn't have extra time. So you're looking for a team that has extra time to prep that's really good playing against another very good team that doesn't have extra time.
Any other points in the quick hitters this week?
That's it. I know we had a couple of listener questions and I had some points about that, but that's it for the quick hitters.
Yeah, so we do have a couple of listener questions here this week, both of them from at Brash Lindberg on Twitter. If you ever have any questions for the show, please reach out on Twitter at Skating Tripods, or you can send them to Kyle as well, at Kyle Hunter Picks. But the question that he's got here related to the Tulane-FIU game, and we'll talk about South Florida and Tulane a little bit later on in the show here. Not to go on a side note here, but FIU is 4-2 with Butch Davis. I mean, I'm stunned about that. They've been much, much better than the expectations that I had for them. But at any point, a listener asking here, you know, he had this number off by about 9 points, wound up with FIU was a 4-point dog in his power ratings. Number was 13 or something like that. And they actually won the game by 13. So he says, what do I do with something like that? He said, yes, it's just one game, but do you look at it as an affirmation of your number or still adjust to the market? I think this is a really good question and something that I've had a little bit of difficulty with throughout the season here.
Yeah, if you played FIU one last week because you had a 4-point line, you definitely need to adjust your line at least somewhat. I mean, it's great that FIU won that game. I will say, if you look at FIU, they have 4 wins so far this year, but who have they beaten outside of Tulane? You know, they beat Alcorn State by 7 points, they beat Rice by 6, and they needed a big comeback to beat Charlotte by 1 point at home. So I don't think FIU has really proven that much other than this Tulane game, which I certainly didn't see coming. You know, I think that it's a good sign that you had FIU in that game. I think that means you were probably closer than what the market was right there, or at least you were higher on FIU than most people, which was a good thing. But I still think you have to adjust to the market at least somewhat. You know, whether you want to be right in line with the market completely, I don't think so. You know, I don't think you want to make that big of an adjustment, but I don't think you cannot adjust when you have that big of a difference. You know, Tulane was favored by, I believe, 13 in that game, so you're 9 points off the market. I don't think you can keep it there.
No, I mean, you can't, because if you're off by 9 points, you're certainly off on one team, and you're probably off on both teams. And that's not good, because that's 2 games that you're going to be off on the following week. And maybe, you know, you're right on both of them. That certainly is a possibility. But still, you want to make sure that you're making a responsible adjustment to both teams here. Yeah, FIU won, and kudos to them for that. You know, they're on a bye here this week, so, you know, we don't have a line out for them here on any game this week. But still, you know, then your number is probably going to be off by quite a bit in that Marshall game on the road on October 28th. And look, maybe FIU goes up there and covers, maybe they don't, but you still want a number that's reasonable relative to the rest of the market, because, you know, if you're off by that much at this stage of the game, you're going to be off week after week after week. And it's not like FIU is going to cover every week. You know, FIU, you know, may cover the majority of the weeks, who knows. But still, you want to make sure that you're a lot closer to the market close than what your number was. I mean, yeah, you were on the right side. You got an easy winner. That's awesome. But that is something that I've done a few times this year here too, you know, is that if a team lost by 35, but the number was off from what I closed it, I'm still going to bump them up because, yeah, they lost by 35, but I'm not rating that team accurately in the market. And that's a concern because you open yourself up for some exposure that way.
Yeah, and part of the reason we're saying this is the odds makers are really good at their job. I mean, they're very good at valuing these teams, and we're looking for small edges across the board. So you can't assume that you're going to have that kind of point value on a team every single week. So, you know, I think that's one of the large reasons that you want to adjust, is knowing that the odds makers are sharp. You don't want to have, you know, FIU as only a dog of 10 points against a solid team going forward when the market's going to be minus 20 or, you know, something like that on the other side. So, you know, unless you just really love the team FIU and you think that you have a big edge, then I think you want to adjust in a pretty big way. You know, if you want to adjust smaller because you think FIU is better, I think that makes some sense. But you have to make some kind of adjustment.
And I think a really good example of this here, at least from my personal power ratings, is Bowling Green. Bowling Green is a team I played on last week. I had that number 5. I caught it at 10 minus 05, I think, against Ohio. And realistically, that's a well could have covered. They lost 48-30, but they gave up 21 points in the fourth quarter. They were only outgained by 19 yards. So from that standpoint, it's a game that probably should have been closer. But you know, obviously I was off on that game. I mean, I was 4 points off from the closing number, 4.5 points off from the closing number, something like that. Well, then getting into this week here, I'm 4 points off again on the Bowling Green number as they take on Northern Illinois. I think it's actually 5 points off. I think I have 8.5 in my power ratings. The number is 13.5. And that's the problem that you run into, is that Bowling Green didn't cover for me last week, made a little bit of an adjustment to them. Obviously it wasn't enough because my numbers tell me to play them again here this week. I'm not going to do it because obviously that tells me that I'm just not rating this team properly. I'm missing something, and that's not the way that it should be.
Yeah, and that's a caution sign. You know, just if any listeners out there have a situation like that, you know, where you were off last week, you're off again this week, rather than just fire right away, that's something that you want to look into a little bit more. And like Adam just said right there, it would make you be hesitant to just take the same side right away.
All right, second part of the question here from Brash Lindbergh regarding power ratings is he says that I'm noticing the bottom of my ratings is gathering more and more teams. I can't get low enough. Is this normal as teams just pack it in, or am I downgrading too aggressively? And this is something that I've noticed as well. And I think, too, I'm actually a little bit too hesitant to move teams down into the 40s in my power ratings. You know, I really should. There are some teams that I should definitely be dropping a little bit more here as we go along. But, you know, that is the thing. I mean, at this point, I think we're just finding out that some teams are just really, really bad.
Yeah, and this is the question I really like of the two. This one, I started with one team rated below 50 in my power ratings before the season. I now have 6 rated below 50. So I definitely adjust a decent amount of teams downward. You know, I don't know how many he's saying that he has rated really lowly, but I think it's actually a good thing to be aggressive, lowering teams at this point in the stage. And, you know, as I was prepping for the show here last night, you know, it's 2 a.m. and I'm running some data queries and I'm trying to test out this theory. And I just kind of looked at this. I thought, you know, with the teams that are rated extremely lowly, you're going to have some massive spreads. So is that a good or bad thing this time of the season? From week 8 on in college football, if you blindly take favorites of 21 points or larger, in conference games, they've covered 57.2% of the time in the past 10 years. Now, if you go from week 9 on, it's 59.2% laying 21 points or more. I think that's really good support to the theory that aggressively lowering teams and power ratings this time of the year is a good idea because, you know, if you're taking favorites of 21 or bigger, that other team has to be rated really lowly. And if that's the case and you're still getting, you know, 57.2% ATS laying that many points, I think that just speaks volumes to the fact that you should be aggressively lowering some teams this time of the year.
Yeah, I had one team below 50 at the start of the year. It was Texas State. I've got five of them down there now, including Texas State. Kent State, San Jose State, Charlotte, and UTEP are the five that are down there for me right now. And that is one thing that I have noticed a little bit, too, is I've been paying closer attention to updating my power rating since I'm doing the article over at the website, is that I'm finding that I'm moving teams down a lot more than I'm moving teams up. Is that a similar thing for you?
Yeah, I think it's easier to move teams down. I know that it kind of seems like, you know, being a pessimist or something, but I think it's easier to move teams down. You know, you see a team that's just consistently underperforming where I'm kind of hesitant to move teams up really quickly unless they prove it consistently. You know, there's, you know, you can overrate a team pretty easily if you go off 1 or 2 weeks of good information or good data from them. And I think that, you know, over the course of the season, you start seeing some teams that, you know, they just are a lot worse than what we thought. You know, maybe the coaching staff isn't doing well. You know, you think of a team like Georgia Southern, you know, a team that was so good in the past under Fritz, and now Summers comes in there and they've been really bad. That's a team that I've just had to consistently downgrade week after week. You know, you can't get low enough on a team like that for a long time. Where on the other side, you know, I think a team has to be really consistently outperforming expectations to really jump in my power ratings. You know, one team that's really done that in a big way is UCF. I think UCF's proven everything that they would have to prove to really jump in the power ratings. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's easier to downgrade teams than it is to move them up.
I was looking at this today for my power ratings article. I think I've bumped up UCF 13.5 points since the start of the year, which is – it seems ridiculous, but you can't get them high enough.
Right. I've moved UCF up 14 points from the beginning of the season, so we're almost in line there. And, you know, UCF's just Scott Frost, we knew he was a good coaching fit. I mean, I think both of us knew that before the season. So that's what's really amazing about this is I didn't really feel like I was trying to be low on UCF going into the season, and yet still moved him up 2 touchdowns.
All right, let's get into some of these games here. We got several games I want to touch on, and then, of course, we'll try to fit in the pick six here. Let's start Thursday night. Big one in the AAC between Memphis and Houston. Houston's a 3-point favorite with reduced juice at some places, 2.5 with extra juice at others. I got to say here, Kyle, I don't know what you've got on this game. I know the spot is atrocious for Memphis. They're coming off of a game against Navy, Service Academy team. Navy turned the ball over 5 times for Memphis to win that game. The spot is terrible, but I still feel like the wrong team is favored here.
I think it makes sense that Houston is favored by a little bit, but I don't think they should be favored by this much. And I know it's not a key number, but this is a game that I don't have strong convictions about. I have Houston -1 for this game. So I'll just tell you what my line is. I don't think I'm going to bet this game. Houston's a tough team to figure out for me. You know, I thought their offense would be better than they are this season. I actually thought that Allen would be a good fit in their offense, and then he was pulled as their starter really quick. Postma has been okay, I guess, had a rough game last game. The big problem for Houston is they have virtually no running game. 4.35 yards per carry so far this year, which on the surface, you say 4.35 yards per carry, that's pretty decent. That's not too bad. But look at the defenses they've played. They've played Arizona, Rice, Texas Tech, Temple, who has a decent defense, SMU, and Tulsa. Some really, really bad rush defenses in there. And Houston still hasn't been able to run the football very well. Memphis has a very good offense. I know Riley Ferguson is slightly banged up, but he should play and be okay here. Memphis is a much better offense here. Now, Houston's defense I trust a lot more than Memphis's defense. Ed Oliver's back. Guy can dominate a game just about as good as anybody in college football. I think if you adjust for strength of the offenses they've played against, then Houston's defense would rank in the top, 25 in the country, where Memphis, they're not a very good defense. They give up quite a few yards. To me, this is offense versus defense. Like you said, it's not a very good spot for Memphis. Having said that, I'm not very high on Houston. Maybe I'm higher on them than you are, by the sounds of things. But in this one, both teams like to play really fast. There's going to be a lot of possessions in this game. So it'll be interesting to see what the total comes out at. I think it'll be relatively high. But Houston hasn't been a very high-scoring team in general, and I think their defense is solid. So no strong lean on this one for me. It sounds like you have a stronger feeling on this game than I do.
Yeah, I got a pretty strong opinion on this game. And I actually adjusted Houston down 3 points off of that Tulsa game last week because, A, my numbers were off on them a little bit. And, B, I mean, you just talk about it. Their level of competition that they've played to have the numbers that they have doesn't really impress me a whole lot. I love this Memphis team. I like them coming into the season. I love Mike Norvell. Riley Ferguson, since that game in the monsoon against Louisiana Monroe, 61.6 completion percentage, 19 passing touchdowns in the last five games. This Houston defense, they've only allowed 21 points per game, but they've given up 5.4 yards per play. So that's a pretty average mark to give up, I think, when you look across the country. And 21 points, it feels like there's some regression coming in that area here for Houston. I had this number, Memphis minus two. If I give Houston 2 points for the spot with short week and Memphis coming off of that Navy game, then I've got this game as a pick'em. So I'll take the 3 points there on Memphis in this spot. Maybe I am a little bit too low on Houston. Like I said, I just adjusted them down to the point where my number would have been the same as yours with Houston minus one if I hadn't made that adjustment to the Cougars. So, maybe I was a little bit too aggressive with that adjustment. The short week in the bad spot is something that, may end up keeping me off of this game. But if I can get a three flat or a three reduced juice and maybe sprinkle on the money line a little bit, I think I'm happy to do that here with Memphis. I just think this is such a good football team. I know they've had a couple of fortunate wins this year, but, man, that offense is strong. The defense is on par with last year's defense. It's not like it's dropped off that much. So I think Memphis is in a pretty decent spot here from a line value standpoint. But again, the situational spot is just so bad. One of the worst of the week for anybody.
Well, and Memphis had that one really bad game against UCF where I watched a decent amount of that game. Memphis looked really bad there. And I remember thinking, I can't decide if Memphis isn't as good or if UCF is just really that good. Memphis has played well since then, though, 70-31 against UConn, and then the win against Navy, which is always difficult. Like I said, I'd want to make sure that Riley Ferguson is okay. I know he has a slight knee injury. He's listed as probable. I would lean to Memphis in this game, but I'm not going to bet it.
All right, let's move to Friday night here. Interesting little slate of Friday night games. Western Kentucky and Old Dominion. Old Dominion starting to get a little bit healthier, so we'll see if they get a little bit better. Marshall, Middle Tennessee State is a big-time game. Air Force and Nevada, two very contrasting styles. But let's go to New Mexico here. Colorado State and New Mexico, the Lobos, a 7 dog at home here. Five dimes out there at 7.5, minus 125. I have a hard time with both of these teams. I mean, Colorado State is a team that a lot of people liked coming into the year. Mike Bobo's done a good job with that program. New Mexico, a team that people did expect to fall off a little bit. New Mexico took heavy steam last week, closed a 2.5-point favorite at Fresno State, and got absolutely run over. So I'm kind of curious to see what happens with this game and also with the line for this game.
Yeah, I have a premium play on this game, so I'm not going to say exactly what my line is, but I'll break down reasons for each side here. First of all, New Mexico, what happened last weekend? I had the over in that game, New Mexico and Fresno State, over 52.5. And Fresno State scores 38 points. You would think I was in pretty good shape. New Mexico puts up a goose egg. That one didn't make any sense to me. I will say the problem with the New Mexico team is that if they get behind by a decent amount right away, they can't throw to catch up. I mean, this is a running team. New Mexico, though, a very tricky offense to prepare for defensively. You know, that option attack that's from the pistol is very unique. Nobody else runs an offense just like that. Colorado State's run defense isn't very good to start with. New Mexico's spread option is dangerous. So if you like New Mexico, that's why you'd like them. And then also, you know, Bob Davie, I think, is a good coach. And coming off a blowout loss, I think they should be more prepared for this one. On the other side, Colorado State, the most balanced offense in the Mountain West. I think Colorado State's going to torch a lot of teams on defense in the Mountain West. They did it at the end of last year. They're doing it again here this season. You know, this is just a really good offense. You know, Gallup at wide receiver, one of the best receivers in the country. Stevens has been really good. They have several running backs who are pretty solid. Colorado State, I believe, ran for over 400 yards against New Mexico last year, only threw the ball 10 times. And I think that they could throw the ball pretty easily on New Mexico as well. So I think Colorado State's going to score here. I assume New Mexico can score quite a bit here as well. You know, like I said, I've already played the side. I like the over as well. I think this is going to be a pretty high-scoring game.
I think it's so difficult because you've got this Colorado State that, you know, at the early part of the year, we really didn't know what to think about them. I mean, that loss to Colorado doesn't look all that great now because Colorado struggled. They played pretty well against Alabama. You got to give them credit for that. Great spot for Alabama. They weren't too invested in that game. But you know, went out to the island and won in a tough spot. Beat Utah State in a tough spot coming back off the island game. And then last week had some issues with Nevada. But Nevada's kind of getting that air raid going a little bit here with Ty Gangi or Ganji, whatever it is, at quarterback. You know, they're playing a little bit better on offense. Gave up 44 points in Gallup in a huge game, as you mentioned. You know, for Colorado State here, I mean, they're comfortable outscoring teams. It's something they don't really have a problem with. I've got this number, Colorado State minus 10, so I got a little bit of value on the Rams here in this one, but it should be a good one, and it's a really underrated Friday night card, to be sure. And we'll touch on that Marshall-Middle Tennessee game here once we get into the pick six segment. All right, let's go out to the Pac-12 for Saturday's action. Mid-afternoon kickoff here between Arizona State and Utah. Out in Salt Lake City, 3:30 kick. You don't get, you know, a whole lot of day games here for Utah when they're taking on opponents that bring some intrigue to the table like Arizona State. Obviously, it's a horrible spot for Arizona State coming off the Washington win. Utah coming off of a close loss to USC. A tough game to handicap all around, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say it's definitely a bad spot for Arizona State, but is it really a good spot for Utah either? You know, they have to be disappointed after last week. I was really impressed with Utah's performance last week. And like I said, I'm still not sure how Arizona State stopped Washington. I know Arizona State's defense isn't good. So I don't want to make too much of that game. And on the other side, you know, Arizona State's offense, you think of them as a pretty prolific offense. They haven't really been as good as you would think this year, especially running football. Arizona State is second to last in the country in yards per carry at 2.81 per carry. To me, that's a big problem against this Utah team because Utah's defensive front is about as good as anybody in the country. I mean, Utah may have some issues in their defense, but their defensive line is not a problem. They're very good. And I think if you're completely one-dimensional against them, Utah's going to get a lot of pressure on the quarterback here. So I see that as a major problem for Arizona State. Having said that, I don't think there's any great line value to be had in this, you know, with the spread being what it is. And I'd want to know if Huntley could come back for this one also. I think he's still listed as questionable, and we've talked about him before. I think he means a lot to this Utah offense. He really helps them a lot with the dual threat. You know, if he plays, you know, I could see laying the points here. If he doesn't play, I wouldn't want to lay this many points. I still don't think Arizona State's that great of a team. Had to upgrade them some, but I didn't want to overrate them too much from 1 week. And Utah's a team that I don't like going against at home very often either.
You can hear about this game for me. I didn't take Arizona State out of the handicap because, you know, like you said, I mean, they're not as good as their performance last week. I give them a lot of credit for it. They have been improving. They, you know, won that game over Oregon. But, you know, as we know, Oregon's not a particularly strong team at this point in time. I think this handicap is solely about Utah. I think it's all about how you view the Utes in this spot. Now, last week, they gave up a 16-play, 98-yard touchdown drive in the third quarter, an 11-play, 88-yard drive to start the fourth quarter, and an 11-play, 93-yard drive about midway through the fourth quarter. That is not Utah football. They do not get moved on like that. They're always physical. They're very strong at the point of attack. You don't see sustained long scoring drives against the Utes. And I think that is a direct correlation to playing a physical game against Stanford the week before. You know, we talk about playing these service academy teams. We talk about playing these teams that run power running style. That's something that has a carryover, not just the following week, but can have a carryover in subsequent weeks as well. USC is still a pretty physical team, and they just wore Utah down in the second half of this game. And now I kind of wonder, you know, how will Utah fare against a team that's not going to body up with them, not going to play physical with them in Arizona State? So that's the question that I have. This is a much better team schematically for Utah to play. Can they rally? Can they bounce back? You know, I mean, look, that game could have gone to overtime last week. Kyle Whittingham opted to go for two. It was a shit show of a play. They didn't get there. That game could have gone to overtime, and who knows what happens with Utah. So Utah, for me, is the sole focus in this handicap. And if the line, you know, gives me value, if I feel like Utah is going to be able to do what it wants to do, and, of course, if Tyler Huntley comes back, it's Utes or nothing for me in this spot.
Yeah, me as well. I can't take Arizona State in this spot, no way. I wouldn't want to lay a bunch of points. You know, I think the Utahs, we pretty much know what Utah is if Huntley's in the game. They're a solid team. They're pretty good on offense with him. Defensively, they're pretty good at stopping the run. A little bit weak in the secondary, but I don't know that Arizona State can take advantage of that well enough. Like I said, you know, I wouldn't want to lay a lot of points here, but it would be Utah or nothing for me. And then just as an aside, I'm kind of curious what your thoughts, Adam, are. What do you think about the going for two there from Whittingham at the end of last game?
I like it, honestly. I mean, you're in there as a big-time dog. You got a chance to knock off a top 15 team. You've got a chance to, you know, improve to 5-1 here as well. Do you really want to take your chances in overtime when I just talked about it, 98, 88, and 93-yard scoring drives for the Trojans in the second half? I mean, I don't think that your defense is going to hold up in overtime. You have 530 yards. You might as well take your shot there and go for it. It just would have been nice to see a different play call that actually gave them a chance.
Yeah, I think this was one of the few instances where I liked it. Usually I wouldn't do that. You know, you hate to lose a game that way. But in this case, I agree with you because Utah was really worn down. I think Whittingham knew that, you know, their defense was just getting worn down drive after drive, and they were on the field so much there in the second half. I think it made some sense. You know, it didn't work out right, but it's easy to say that after the fact.
And you and I talk about this a lot, and we probably don't talk about it enough, but that cat can coach, man. Kyle Whittingham is so good.
Yeah.
All right, one more
absolutely.
Talk here, and then we'll get – go ahead.
I was just going to say, absolutely, he's a very good coach. And actually, one thing I had in my notes from earlier was just that I wanted to mention again how bad Jim Mora is as a coach. I feel like, you know, this was another week to say it. One thing I wanted to say is just that, you know, I was thinking about Jim Mora here the other night when it was the Arizona game, and I thought, you know, maybe we should just wait until Jim Mora gets a decent quarterback because he just probably needs a quarterback and then he'll be solid. But oh, wait, never mind. He actually has a good quarterback. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to say about Jim Mora anymore. And then I thought maybe we could rag on Butch Jones a little bit, but it almost feels like piling on him at this point. I don't even know what to say.
I'm totally fine with going after Jim Mora and Butch Jones. I mean, dude, someone needs to take Butch Jones out back and just put him out of his misery at this point. And you know who's going to do it this week is Nick Saban when Alabama hangs like 55 or 60 on Tennessee. And then it's going to be the world's most obvious fire on – I don't even know if they'll wait till Monday. They'll probably just do it on Sunday. They might even not let him on the plane. I don't know. But Alabama's going to put the final nail there in that Butch Jones coffin. And I'll be curious to see what happens with UCLA. I mean, if UCLA looks bad this week against an Oregon team that's just in complete disarray with all their injuries right now, I mean, I don't know how Jim Mora can last the season, to be completely honest with you. So that'll be something to keep a close eye on here as we go throughout the rest of the season. Let's go to game 377-378. South Florida takes on Tulane. South Florida up to an 11.5-point favorite here. Had a listener request to talk about this game. We touched on Tulane a little bit earlier in terms of one of our listeners having a pretty big disparity in the numbers for Tulane. You know, this is a really difficult thing to try and figure out because I think Tulane, even though you're a program that has a lot of that was a massive ahead spot for them at FIU. And, you know, Tulane didn't have look-ahead spots, but that was one of them. They're not as bad as they played last week. And now they take on a Florida team that, you know, I still feel like I don't know what I'm going to get from the Bulls each week.
Yeah, I think this is I have this number at 11. So I have no strong opinion when it comes to the number. However, my lean would be, based on the matchups, I would lean towards South Florida. The South Florida defense is sixth in the nation in yards per play allowed. Strong is definitely helping them there. I figured he would. They didn't start out playing great on defense. They've been a lot better here lately. Still, you know, Tulane certainly a unique attack for them to be ready to defend. I assume they'll do pretty well against it. Tulane coming off that really surprising loss. My problem with Tulane here is Tulane's 117th in the nation in yards per play allowed at 6.46. You know, Tulane, I don't see how they get stops in this game. You know, are they really going to be able to stop USF? You know, Flowers is still a really good quarterback. Their offense has gotten going better here. They're not as good as they were last year offensively, but they're still good offensively. I think USF's going to be able to score quite a few points here. And then the problem for Tulane is, if they get behind, they're not a passing team. This is a team that has to run the football. So even though my number is just a little bit lower than this, my slight lean would be USF. I couldn't take Tulane here. I think it's a tough matchup.
Yeah, I mean, my number is 9 on this game because I've really respected what Tulane has done here. I mean, I think what really set me off on them was that close loss to Navy where, you know, they're playing against another triple option team. A team that's had the option for longer, a team that's better at running it, more efficient at running it, and they hung right in that game on the road. So I gave them a lot of credit for that. For South Florida here, Darius Tice and Dearness Johnson, who are replacing Marlon Mack, both of them were in walking boots a couple of weeks ago. Now they're pretty much back to normal, so that enhances this South Florida rushing attack. You know, South Florida, yeah, Charlie Strong walked into a really great situation, but they were still changing schemes. He had a ton of talent. They had to morph, you know, the playbook into this talent. It takes time to do that generally. And so the slow start to the year a little bit didn't really bother me that much. Now I'm just wondering how much I want to increase this team's power rating because they just look really, really good right now. Like you said, the perfect things there about Tulane, if they get behind, they can't throw the football, and they're probably going to get behind in this game because defensively, you know, it's hard for them. I will say this. When you get a matchup like this with a service academy against another team, and this is something you can kind of look at as well with Air Force, I should say with a triple option team. When you get a team like Air Force, for example, against Nevada, it's all about the opponent's efficiency level because, you know, you're going to have a limited number of possessions. The team that runs the option should, in theory, control the time of possession. So for South Florida here, how efficient are they on offense? Can they maximize their lower number of possessions? The answer here is yes. For Nevada on Friday night, you know, we don't really know. We're not entirely sure because they're going to that air raid scheme. So that's one thing that you need to look at in these triple option games is that, you know, can the team that's facing the triple option not just defend it, but also be efficient with a limited number of possessions? And I think that's where South Florida does have a big edge here.
Yeah, I agree. And you mentioned it a little bit earlier as far as Nevada with the other game there. Nevada's offense has been a lot better with Ganji in there. So Nevada's a team that you definitely shouldn't be extremely low on now. I think that's a team that everybody should be upgrading in their power ratings at least somewhat. I'm not saying Nevada's a great team, but they've been much better when Ganji's been in the game. So, you know, in this spot, as far as Tulane, I think Tulane will get their yards against USF. I think USF is going to be pretty consistently efficient on offense to where it's hard for Tulane to keep up.
All right, let's get through our pick six segment here. Six games, rapid fire fashion. We'll start Friday night. Marshall at Middle Tennessee State. Marshall's down to a 2.5 point favorite across the market here, as we've seen a little bit of Middle Tennessee love this week.
Yeah, I'll definitely take Marshall here. I do like this one. I've been high on Marshall all year. I wish I'd played them more times than I have. I took them over the season win total at 5, which obviously is going to be fine. I just think Marshall's still underrated. Marshall has a really good defense. They're the best defense in the conference by a lot. Middle Tennessee, Richie James came back last weekend, but Sock's still out, and I think he's doubtful for this one. Unless he plays, I like Marshall in this one.
I like Middle Tennessee in this spot. You look at Middle Tennessee State on the year, plus 0.6 yards per play, offense versus defense. So they have been a little bit unlucky. Big reason why is because they've turned the football over a ton. That's the problem with not having Brett Stockstill. But if their turnover luck does regress a little bit here, if some DBs start dropping picks, if fumbles bounce their way, Middle Tennessee State's a play-on team, and I think you can see that in the yards per play difference. So I do like Middle Tennessee State. For those that want a little bit more information about this game, I did write up that preview here early hours of the morning over at bangthebook.com. Let's go to Saturday, the first game on the board, game 315-316, Iowa takes on Northwestern. This number is kind of all over the place between pick and 1.5, so we'll say Northwestern minus 1.
Hey, first of all, I think it's kind of nice when we disagree on a game. I know we agree more than we disagree, so it's nice for us to have a good disagreement there on the Marshall and TSU game. So we'll see who gets bragging rights for next week. Iowa-Northwestern. This is not one I feel very strongly about. Northwestern, I should have played them last weekend. I'm really kicking myself for not playing that. That line was not where it should have been. I knew Northwestern was better than what they'd played. I was afraid to overreact to what I saw the last week from Maryland and how bad they were against Ohio State. Ended up passing on that one and shouldn't have. I'm going to take Northwestern in this one for the purposes of this segment, but I'm not going to play it personally.
I like Northwestern here in this spot. I mean, Iowa should have lost to Iowa State, who Iowa State's a rapid riser. If you follow Bill Connolly's S&P metrics, Iowa State's well up there. Campbell, he's doing a phenomenal job. Iowa had that close loss to Penn State, had that close loss to Michigan State. I think they're kind of living on reputation as, you know, being this team that can play close games against better teams. I think Northwestern's a better team, and I think just getting the one there, I've got this game actually lined at Northwestern minus 4.5. So I like the Wildcats here. In this spot, I think people kind of sold some of their Wildcats stock because they had a lot of helium coming into the year. People were saying, hey, if somebody can challenge Wisconsin in the Big Ten West, it's Northwestern. They've not lived up to those expectations. I think people have sold them a little bit prematurely here. All right, let's go to why don't we just slide down a little bit here. This is a really interesting game, very interesting line movement. North Texas is getting 3.5 on the road at Florida Atlantic. North Texas is not in a good spot here at all, but the market doesn't seem to care because this number opened 6.5. It's done nothing but come down.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this one. I'll hesitantly take Florida Atlantic. I'd be more interested in taking the over if the number's right. North Texas is much improved. I think Littrell's done a really good job with that team. But Florida Atlantic coming off a bye, you would think they'd be ready to play in this one. So I'll lean to Florida Atlantic here, but nothing strong.
I don't know what's going on in this game. If you watched some of that North Texas game, and I went back and watched some of it, and I saw the final play, Mason Fine got his ass kicked in this game. What a warrior that kid is to go out here and win this game for North Texas. Huge win for this program. They're two games away from getting to a bowl for the second straight year. They made it as a 5-7 team last year due to APR scores. But I can't think that he's in any decent shape to play this game here this week against Florida Atlantic. I get the line move. I understand it. North Texas is a team that's rising in power ratings. But, man, coming off of that game where Fine took such a beating, I got to go with Florida Atlantic here in this spot. Let's go down to game 351-352 here. Wake Forest getting a touchdown on the road against Georgia Tech.
I'll take Wake Forest. I think this is a relatively low-scoring game. I don't trust Georgia Tech laying points very often, especially a touchdown or more. So I'm going to take a team that I think has a defense that's at least as good as the other team and grab the 7 points in what should be a low-scoring environment. So I'll take Wake Forest.
I think that makes a lot of sense. It's the way that I was looking to go with this game here, too. Also, a really tough loss for Georgia Tech last week. They got to try to bounce back, and then they go to Clemson the following week. Virginia's not a gimme game anymore. They host Virginia Tech. You know, for Wake Forest here, I mean, coming off of some extra prep time, played Florida State tough, played Clemson tough. Those were two games where they were at an athleticism disadvantage. I think that's negated a little bit here in this game against triple option. So I think Wake Forest does stack up pretty well in this spot. I would look to take the line value there with them. And that number has come down from 8.5 to 7. Big game in primetime, 355, 356, Michigan getting 10 in Happy Valley against Penn State.
I'm really looking forward to watching this game, first of all, but I'm going to take Penn State and lay the 10. I wouldn't do this very often. I think Penn State's just a very consistent team, very balanced on both sides of the ball. I don't trust Michigan to be able to score enough points here. I don't really want to lay 10. If it was less than 10, I'd like it a decent amount. But I think Penn State's just better in every aspect of the game, so I'll take Penn State.
There were 9.5s yesterday at Pinnacle. They're up to 10 now. I like Penn State in this spot, too. My numbers actually have this game 14.5, and I've really soured on Michigan here lately. I know their defense is really good, and I know that this is a game that they're going to get up for, but offensively, they're kind of a mess. And Penn State's going to get theirs on offense. They just have too many playmakers, too many skill guys. If Penn State gets into the upper 20s here in this spot, I don't think Michigan can compete it with a scoring environment like that. So I'd look to lay it here. I would sit and wait and see if a 9.5 pops again, because I think it's certainly a possibility. You got 10 reduced juice at Bet Online right now. I think Penn State's the side here in this game, but we'll see how this one plays out. One more here in the pick six. We'll go to game 401, 402 on the board. Notre Dame, 3.5-point home favorite in South Bend against Southern Cal.
I think this is a good spot for Notre Dame. I've had to lower Southern Cal a little bit here the last couple weeks. I'll take Notre Dame. I don't know if I love this one, but, you know, I think Notre Dame's quite a bit better this season. They're coming off a bye week. USC off a really tough game. I think it's a better spot for Notre Dame.
I think so, too. My raw number on this game is 1, but the spot for USC, the long travel coupled with Notre Dame on extra rest, probably makes Notre Dame more of a 2-2.5-point favorite for me here. So it's probably a no play, but I certainly understand, you know, looking at the Notre Dame side, because, like you said, I mean, they have been a pretty decent team here throughout the year. Brandon Wimbush seems like a really good fit for that offense. So there's the pick six segment. One more item of business to take care of here. That is, we'll kick the extra point with Kyle Hunter's exclusive free pick for our show listeners.
Yeah, I have to say two things. First of all, thank you for not giving me the BYU and East Carolina game in the pick six. I kind of had that one circled as the one that you would pick for the shitty one that I had no idea what to pick. I'm not going to lay points with BYU, but I don't want to take East Carolina. Gosh, such a horrible game. And then second of all, I'm kind of pissed off at the fact that the line moved pretty big on my free pick that I was going to give. I'm going to go ahead and give it. I hope it comes back to the number. I still like it at what it's at now, but I like Miami here against Syracuse this week. I think Syracuse coming off that really big upset win over Clemson is going to get enough love that this number is, you know, a solid value. I think Miami has been a good team all throughout the season. They've had to come back and win the last couple of games. I think Mark Richt can have his team ready to play because he can point out, you know, we have to be more consistent from the start of the game. So now it's 14.5, 15. I still like it. My number was 17.5 here. So I like Miami this week.
I mean, if you want, we can go back and start the pick six over again. We can do Georgia Southern and UMass and Idaho, Missouri. We can start that whole thing over again if you want. But Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com, what's going on over at the website right now, man?
Well, the newsletter is the first thing I want to mention. 56-25 the last 81 free plays. I've had a lot of people thanking me for how those have been going. I'm not going to keep winning 56-25 in the next 81, so don't expect that. Certainly love that they've been winning so well, but sign up for that at huntersportspicks.com. The other thing is I have a Sharp Money report that goes out every Friday. Only $69 now for the rest of the season. Sharp public splits, breakdowns where the money's going every single Friday for both college football and the NFL. If you're interested in that, message me on Twitter at Kyle Hunter Picks or email me Kyle at huntersportspicks.com.
That's a nice price on that, sir. Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Thank you so much for joining us, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. I know we ran a little bit long there, but we had a lot of things to talk about. Wanted to make sure that we got to a lot of games here, especially also because we're only going to have about half of a college football segment with Sports Cheat on tomorrow's show, so we can do some NBA with him. Wednesday, Brian Leonard and Wes Reynolds. Thursday, Brad Powers and a guest to be determined later with Rolf Michaels unable to join us. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment, myself and Sports Cheetah, and then Brent from DSI Sportsbook with the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.